Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, we've had a record water year in the Sierra. How are we going to deal with all that water? Chad Blanchard joins us. He's the federal water master, plus on the Power Pundit panel, Barry Smith and Nick DeArchangel. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are delighted to welcome to the program for the first time Chad Blanchard. He is the federal water master, the man responsible for dealing with all the water that is in Lake Tahoe and flowing down the Truckee River. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Sam.
So obviously, this is the most phenomenal winter in most people's memory. Mount Rose, unbelievable amounts of snow sitting on top of there. Lake Tahoe filling up rapidly. It's been astonishing to watch the numbers as that has risen. How much room is left in Lake Tahoe at this point as we tape this?
We have a little over 2 feet of room left to come to fill in Tahoe. However, you know, at this point, we have possibly 3 to 4 feet more water to come into Tahoe.
Just based on the snowpack.
Based on the snowpack and the current forecast. So we are beginning evacuations of water from Tahoe to kind of make room for the forecasted rise.
Now, one of the things that people may not be aware of is that this is all federally mandated of how much water you can release, what you have to release. So at this point in time, are you just releasing as much as you can legally release to make more room?
No, at this point, we're kind of balancing it, right? We are mandated to fill. We have to fill if we can, but we can't exceed the upper limit of 6229.1 either. So there's a balancing act. And what we have to do every day is just look at the forecast, look at the current conditions, what the reservoir is doing, and then just evaluate how much time do we have between now and when we're going to peak, and how much volume do we have to come in that time, and what if we release this amount, where are we going to be? If we release this amount, where are we going to be? So it's just a kind of a balancing act, and we just have to reevaluate regularly and see where we're at.
Okay, so now as far as the reservoirs, because there are lots of reservoirs below Lake Tahoe, some of those still have capacity in them. It's got to be an incredible juggling act, because here we are in the beginning of March, you've still got plenty of time for much more snow and rain to come. But you have to balance it out so at the end of the water year, hopefully you have everything just where you want it to be.
Right. The idea conditioned is to fill the reservoir with the last melting drop. You know, that's kind of the thought of ideal operations. However, that's hard to do. Operations are dependent on forecast, and forecasts are not perfect.
What? I hadn't heard that.
So what we have to do is just, again, continually monitor. Now, Boca, Stampede, and Prosser are flood control reservoirs. So we have certain levels. We have to keep them below during the winter months and the early spring months to be able to capture inflow if we have a flood event. Those reservoirs, Prosser and Boca, are basically at flood control right now. Stampede is a little bit below flood control, but we are trying to manage that increase to bring it up slowly, because once we're at flood control, we have to pass everything that comes in.
Now, what about Pyramid Lake? Because the water is going to flow down to Pyramid Lake, is flowing down to Pyramid Lake. How much room do they have before they start to have problems? And they've already had road problems, but I mean problems as far as Pyramid Lake goes.
There's a tremendous amount of room that they can come up, obviously. It's way down from what it was after the very wet spell in the 1990s. So there's a lot of room for Pyramid to come up before they have issues around the lake. I think they can manage that pretty well.
What about as far as getting over to Lahontan and going into Fallon? Where are we looking as far as the water is there?
Well, that is an operation, again, that is being balanced between the Bureau of Reclamation and TCID are working hard to come up with numbers as far as operations to pass water now and try to make sure that they have room for the inflow that's to come. The problem is again, you know, the forecast has a wide range because from this point going forward, we know what we have on the ground. We know what the soil conditions are, which are extreme, both extremely wet soil conditions, a tremendous amount of snow on the mountain. But what's the weather going to do between now and the end of the year? We don't know that. So, again, you have to balance that. You have to try to make sure that you're releasing enough water to make room, but they have to fill, too, on the other end. So it's the same thing we have on the Truckee side. It's just kind of a continual balancing act, and you have to kind of manage it in a way that you're constantly looking at it and making adjustments, if you can, to account for the inflow that's coming in, but still fill.
Now, Senator Reid got the bill passed finally. It took, what, 25 years, almost 30 years. Does California still get a percentage of the water from Lake Tahoe?
That's part of the Interstate Compact, and there is a distribution that's set up on how much can be used for the communities around there, yeah.
Okay, so the big question is, do they want any of your water at this point?
Well, they take the water that they need for their local communities, but that's not going to change. You know, it's a very small amount compared to the water we're talking about coming into Tahoe and the water we're talking about having to spill out of the lake.
In your wildest dreams, did you imagine this year?
You know, we always know it's possible, definitely. This might be a little bit bigger than we had thought, but looking back in history and looking back at the numbers, we know that we can turn around in 1 year. And even if we're a little bit below the rim like we were this year at Tahoe, we know it can happen. However, this is probably a little bigger than we had imagined possible.
You know, I always think back to when the Helms Pit was turned into the Sparks Marina, and Bruce Breslow was the mayor at the time, and he said, well, it's going to take about 10 years to fill. And then we had the wet winter, and all of a sudden, the marina was full.
Yeah, again, you know, one thing in this area, we tend to have prolonged drought periods, but often they end in a big event, in a big flood. This is another example of that. So it's kind of interesting how that cycle goes. And you can see that in looking at back in, you know, we have a graph of the Lake Tahoe elevations, which go back to 1900. And you can see it's very cyclical, up and down. And so we have extended periods of drought, and then we have very wet periods and kind of average years in between. And it's interesting to see how that has played out over the last century plus. But what's more, you know, how is it going to go in the future? You just don't know.
All right, let's take a break. We'll with Chad Blanchard, the Federal Water Master, when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with the federal water master, Chad Blanchard. John James, who used to be the state climatologist, he would always complain that we were in drought, we were in drought, we were in drought. And I was a TV weatherman at the time, as you know. And I said to him one day, I said, when do we know the drought is over? And he said, when Lake Tahoe is full. Still true today?
Oh, absolutely. You know, everybody has different kind of definitions of drought depending on their little world and what they're dealing with. But for us, it's storage. It's water storage upstream for water supply for the Truckee River. And if Tahoe fills, the drought's over for sure.
Do you talk about Independence Lake at all? Because that's the water storage.
Yeah, that's a private reservoir for Tumwa, yeah.
And how's that doing?
Oh, that will fill for sure easily. That typically fills every year.
And people don't realize that that is the storage along with the surface water that we have in the Reno area that gives us that drought supply for the Reno area.
Yeah, along with Donner. So Independence and Donner, and then they have some credit storage that TROA, the new Truckee River Operating Agreement, allows them to credit store unused water rights upstream. And that it adds to their drought supply also.
Now, are we still under the situation where if a developer wants to come in and they want to have an acre foot of water, they have to buy an acre and a half of feet of water to be able to make that project work?
You know what? I'm not sure the exact conversion at this point. That's a better question for Tumwa. But definitely if you're going to have a development or build where you need water, you have to supply a water right.
And above that water right, because they want to take it out of agriculture so that the region can expand. All right, so this is a question I'm sure you're not going to like, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It seems to me, having lived here since 1978, as you said earlier, that we see these cycles of where we have drought for several years or average, below average, a little bit above average, and then we have, somewhat of a monster year like this. It doesn't seem like that's changed in the last 100 years of record keeping.
No. I mean, when you look back in time, we've had periods of drought and then extreme wet periods following that. So sometimes there are multiple year periods of wet. The last two, 2006 and 2011, were kind of one and done, where we had really big years. The lake came way up and then it went right back to dry. But for the most part, yeah, we've been in that cycle, and I'm sure probably before record keeping, that's how it was also.
All right. So how does that play into, if at all, into climate change?
I don't know. That's something that obviously is talked about. Luckily for us, we have to deal with what's there, what right. We get this year. We don't have the requirement to plan ahead. That's more for Tumwa and some of the other agencies that have to supply water. We manage what is there at the time. So luckily, we don't have to worry about that as much as other entities.
Let me ask you this. At this point in time, as we're taping this, and we may have some more weather coming in this weekend, how far ahead are we at this point?
So for the water year, which is October 1st through September 30th, starting October 1st this year, October was the wettest October in history with over 9 inches at Tahoe City. Then we didn't have a very big December, January, we didn't have a very big November. December was good. January was the second biggest January ever, followed by February, which was the second biggest February ever. So those all added up. At the end of February, so from October through February, we're 10 inches more precipitation at Tahoe City this year than any other year back to 1910 when we have precipitation records at the lake. So it's incredible. If we did not receive another drop of rain the entire water year, which is another 7 months, we would still be the third biggest water year for precipitation at Tahoe City in history. And Reno is already number one. Reno is already number one if we didn't receive another drop.
Okay. So what do we need at Tahoe City to be number one?
So 1982 is number one. It's almost 70 inches of water. We would need about 12 more inches between now and the end of the water year. So again, that's the end of September, 7 months away. So at the pace we were going, that was very achievable. It just depends on how we finish the year. Now, the second biggest year, which is 1995, is only a couple more inches to go. So there's a good chance we are going to, even if it goes dry, that we will beat 1995 and end up being the second biggest water year for precipitation. We'll have yet to see, you know, how we finish out as far as 1982 and being the first.
And that's where we have to leave it. What a remarkable year, and thank you for the great job you and your staff do maintaining our water. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Nevada Newsmakers coverage of the 2017 legislative session is brought to you by Pro Group Management, the Nevada Trucking Association, the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome for the first time, and that's regrettable that it's been so long, Barry Smith is here. He's the Executive Director of the Nevada Press Association, and Nick DeArchangel, Director of Communications with the Nevada State Education Association. Welcome, both of you.
Good morning.
Thanks.
Barry, one reason I'm particularly excited to have you here is I've never seen a president before go after the press in such a fashion. And now the press is doing what the press does, which is they have tightened up, they are fact-checking everything, and as they set up each story that they deliver each night and each morning, they give a litany of all the things the president has said and fact-check them as they go. And, you know, the old line was always, you know, never go after a newspaper because they have ink by the barrel full. This is the entire media, with the exception of some right-leaning channels, but eventually that's going to go too, isn't it?
It certainly has been a wake-up call for the reporters, for the news media, for the newspapers, and a lot of hand-wringing has gone on. I mean, that started in the campaign, but now that Trump's in office and has the authority with him, so I think in a lot of ways you can say that's a good thing, is what they're doing.
It really is, in a way, because the press has kind of been going along, and the companies that own various portions of the press have been making a lot of money over the election cycle because of the increased ratings, et cetera. But all of a sudden, it got serious.
It's very serious, and it also helps them reconnect with the audience, with their own mission of what they're supposed to be doing. I think the more transparency, that's always been something that I think has been lacking, as showing the job that they do and why they do it and how it gets done, instead of just putting it out there and saying, trust us. So there's some things that are worrisome about what's going on, because a lot of the revelations have been based on leaks or unnamed sources and so on. And that puts the full faith and trust of the institution, of the newspaper itself, on the line. So I worry about how much of that is going on. But it's also, I think, it's been very well done so far.
But isn't that the responsibility of the editors? You know, I know that from my career as in TV news, that if ever I had an unnamed source, or I was always asked to get at least two unnamed sources, I would not just go on the air with that. I would sit down with my news director and explain exactly who the sources are and deal with them. Sometimes it would end up with the general manager and legal counsel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my experience as well, working in news, was that you always had, you know, there was legal was looking for this, right? And I think that another aspect that you have when thinking about the Washington Post and other papers is this this feeling of competition, of wanting to get this story first and wanting to take this as far as they can go. Again, driving readership. I think I heard the New York Times has a boost in subscriptions. Just based on this presidency,
right? Right on the homepage of the newspaper, they have a box for donate, subscribe, right. Whatever you want to do. They're using it for fundraising, too. Another interesting thing is, you know, Major Garrett, who's with CBS News now, he's the White House correspondent, was for many years with Fox News. And a lot of us have maintained over the years that the news side of Fox News gives it straight up. And it's the opinion shows that are the right-leaning programs. I think Major Garrett's reporting for CBS has without a doubt shown that CBS and Major Garrett are not holding back at all with a Republican president.
That's very true. The news reporting across the board has been spot on as far as I'm concerned. Again, one of the concerns I have that people need to be educated and realize there's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of hazy ground there, gray area between straight news and opinions that especially happens on the cable news networks, that they just lead one or bleed right from one end to the other without making clear. These are our opinions. These are our reporters. And that's something that needs to be stressed all the time. Again, part of that transparency, how this works.
The other thing that has to be pointed out is that the 48% of people that voted for Donald Trump are still incredibly supportive of Donald Trump. They see the media as bad news.
Well, last night I noticed on Fox News they were running polls, and they showed a pretty even split as far as confidence in the president as a leader, where they thought he was going. They were not happy. The numbers were relatively low as far as his disposition. But as I think you're right, I think the base is still firmly attached and supportive of what he's doing.
You know, polling, it seems to me over the last several election cycles, you know, my phone rings 99% of the time. My landline at the office rings, and it's either somebody trying to sell me something, give me a loan, or an opinion poll. And I just hang up on all of them. So I'm wondering who's answering these polls, because they've been so inaccurate for many cycles now.
Well, no disrespect to pollsters, but one thing I've always said is the one thing you know about polls is they're wrong, because they're a picture, a snapshot in time. So what's true today, I don't think is necessarily true tomorrow. There's a lot of variations. I think the reporting that goes on about polls does not dig deep enough, does not, again, explain to people who was asked, who responded, get into those details. It's just a headline and something to grab your attention. But people have put far too much trust in polling.
And even the respected pollster, Mark Melman, who I have incredible respect for, did a wonderful job of polling, deep polling, for the Harry Reid race, the last race that he ran 7 years ago. But even he got it wrong with the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Well, I think you have a point as far as who are you reaching? How are you getting to them now between cell phones and landlines? With our organization, Nevada State Education Association, we poll our members all the time, but we have direct access, and we have different methods of being able to do that through either telephone or through email. And we're connecting with them on issues that they care about. So when you're just kind of doing a shotgun blast out to the general public, you know, how credible is that information?
And that's where we have to leave it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thoughtful discussion. We'll be right back.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
You can check our archive at NevadaNewsmakers.com. We've got 12 years of shows, all for you to watch anytime you want. More great guests coming to you from Carson City next week. We'll see you then.